We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, what's going on, listeners? I am Richie, and we'll be joined by Spencer this time around for another BuzzBeat episode. On today's episode, we're going to give our reaction to the 2019 schedule, and then at the second half of this episode, we're going to answer several of your Twitter questions. Just a reminder, we are the go-to Charlotte Hornets podcast for deep analysis and a proud member of the Blue Wire Network. Be sure that you guys are subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever app you listen to us on. Spencer, it's been a while. How's everything going with you and your household?
Good. Yeah, everything's good. You know, it's that time of year where we record like once every few weeks, and then I missed the last one. So it's it's been a while since I talked to you guys. It's always like a weird feeling, but it's like the doldrums of the sports season. Not much going on. I've been, you know, deep into Red Sox baseball for like the past month or so, which has been pretty depressing this year. So I'm ready for football, Richie, that's for sure. I would say that I am cautiously optimistic about the Panthers. I'm still in like wait and see mode with Cam, which I know is going against the grain with this fan base. I got it. But where do you stand with the Panthers? Do we have like a playoff team in us?
It's a good word. It's a good word. Cautiously optimistic. I would say we do have a playoff team. I think, you know, NFC South division winners is going to be something that's going to be tough to attain, but I think a wild card is definitely in the books for us. I think, you know, if we can get to 10 wins, that would be great, and I think that would put us in the playoff position. I'm a little bit higher on Cam than I know you are because we've talked about this off air. And, yeah, you know, coming off a surgery, shoulder injury where he wasn't at his best last season throwing downfield, that's still kind of up in the air. And seeing that on a week-to-week basis and having that being tested week in and week out. But I will say that I really like what they've done with the defense, you know, drafting Burns as well as getting McCoy, Gerald McCoy on the defensive end. And switching to that 3-4 is going to be interesting as well. So I think the defense should hold up, and hopefully Cam's shoulder holds up as well.
Yep.
All right, so let's jump right into the schedule reaction. The NBA released its schedule on Monday, August 12th. The Charlotte Hornets are going to be opening the regular season on October 23rd against the Chicago Bulls. It feels like, Spencer, they always open up against the Milwaukee Bucks. Surprisingly, we open up at home against the Chicago Bulls. The league average for back-to-backs this season is 12.4. Charlotte is going to have 12 back-to-backs this season, so right around league average. Last season, they had 15 back-to-backs. So let's just give our gut initial reactions. I don't put too much stock into the schedule, but I know a lot of people do. In seasons past, Spencer, normally the back half of the season has always been, you know, road heavy. You know, a lot of road games, especially those last couple of months. This season, we have 21 home games in the second half of the season. Although, a little bit of an asterisk here, it's really just 20 because one of the games in France counts as a home game, but clearly is in a neutral site. So a little bit of a change up this season. Back half of the schedule is not loaded with road games. I think it's also interesting to see that they get their West Coast swing out of the way. On October 27th, they play four teams in 6 days with the Lakers, Clippers, Kings, and the Warriors. And then the last observation I have, Spencer, even though a lot of their games late are at home, based on Vegas's expected win percentage, their strength of schedule slowly increases as the season progresses. So any gut reactions you have to the schedule?
Yeah, really. I mean, the start of it certainly is interesting. You know, you get two home games to start the season, and then almost right away, you know, you get a West Coast road trip with four out west with both LA teams, Golden State, and I can't remember off the top of my head who the other one is, but it's a tough road trip. So, you know, I think that's nice that you get that trip out of the way early, number one, but it's also a good way to, like, just take the temperature on this team earlier in the year. You know, are they going to lose those four games on the road right away by a combined 100 points, or are they going to come out and be competitive? So I think that's kind of – I'm sure Coach Borrego is looking forward to that trip early in the season. You know, it's nice to have the nationally televised game with Kemba returns early on November 7th. You know, that's only a few weeks into the season. So it's nice that everybody's still excited about basketball. I think that's going to be a really cool scene in Charlotte. I think that it's going to be overwhelmingly appreciative, the crowd of Kemba Walker. And it's,
I would hope so.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, for a season that's really probably going to be a bummer and depressing most of the time, it's nice that we just, like, have that early in the season to just circle our calendar and be like, okay, this is a night where we're going to tune in and really, you know, leave that viewing just satisfied, because I think it's kind of like a closing, you know, we're going to close the book on that chapter that night. You know what I mean, Richie? Like, emotionally, I think for a lot of fans, certainly for me, seeing Kemba play in Charlotte in another jersey will, like, help me move on. So
that's true, because it really hasn't set in yet that he's not on this roster. And, you know, seeing those pictures with him in the Celtics uniform definitely is kind of strange. But to see him on the court going against us, definitely going to be an emotional time for him and emotional time for us. And then there's also the side story of Terry Rozier also going against his old team. I think at that point, as fans, we can kind of move on and turn the page. Not that we're forgetting about Kemba by any means, but that's a, you know, a good time for us to kind of move on as fans and say, hey, Kemba Walker, as of now, no longer part of this team, but maybe he will return later. Who knows? But definitely emotional time for that. Last question about the schedule, just the schedule in general. I think a lot of people, like, you know, are anticipating this day. Can't wait for the schedule to come out. I, on the other hand, I don't really care about the schedule per se. Like, I you know, 82 games is 82 games. But do you put any kind of stock into the schedule in terms of how it affects the team win-losses wise?
I mean, not particularly. I think there's enough evidence and data out there that suggests that back-to-backs are a tough life to live. You know, and I think especially for teams like, you know, rosters like Charlotte had last year and the year before, and maybe even the year before that, where there were more veterans and they were, you know, potential playoff team squads. And we always seem to get be on the bad end of the league average in back-to-back. So on the margins, I think it makes a difference, you know, when you're battling for one of the last playoff spots. But in general, I'm with you. Like, 82 games, 82 games, everybody's got to go do it. And you know that going in. So you're either good enough to be in the postseason or you're not, like, when it boils down to it. I don't think that if you're one of those people that's looking back and be like, well, all this, it was the way it was because our you know, we got screwed by the schedule makers. I think that's probably not the right way to look at it.
I guess the good thing this year, Spencer, we really don't have to worry about that, because I doubt that we're going to be in that playoff hunt in terms of being, you know, a couple games out of the eighth seed.
Not going to matter this year, Richie. You're correct. Not going to matter at all.
But one last note about the schedule, not that it matters, like I was just talking about, but if there's a good follow on Twitter, his name is Ed Kupfer, at EDKUPFER. I believe that's how it's pronounced. The Hornets are in the bottom 10 in the NBA when it comes to rest advantage, meaning more often than not, Charlotte's going to be entering these games with less days rest than their opponent. So it's still going to play a role in how they play and how they perform. But again, it's really not going to matter with this team, whose focus is not necessarily on winning and losing, but developing those young players. And we do have some questions on the other side of the break, Spencer, about some of these young players. Let's first get into a little offer that we have for you guys. Football season is here. It's time to start placing your bets for NFL and college football. Blue Wire is teaming up with sports information traders and the legend John Price, one of the world's most successful sports bettors. so our listeners are given the chance to make more money on football this season.
Go to sportsinformationtraders.com/blue and get the college football and NFL futures plays and make up to 15 times your money for only a $99 investment. Last year, Sports Information Traders correctly predicted the Clemson Tigers to win the college football championship, making one client alone $110,000. The year before that, Kurt Pressley of Sports Information Traders made $1 million with a preseason wager on the Philadelphia Eagles to win the Super Bowl.
John Price and the Sports Information Traders team can guide you on the best ways to make money on futures bets and preseason football betting picks. You get all of that for just $99 and the opportunity to make 15 times your money.
It's totally worth getting Sports Information Traders betting picks. Sports Information Traders has been featured in ESPN, Gambling911.com, Entrepreneur Magazine, and many more. John Price has been successfully making money betting on sports for over 20 years. Make a big return for a small investment with Sports Information Traders futures picks.
Get started now by going to sportsinformationtraders.com/blue. Again, make sure you go to sportsinformationtraders.com/blue to have your chance at a 15 times return this football betting season. All right, let's get into some Twitter questions, Spencer. Like I noted prior to this, we are going to talk about some young players. Zachary Pletchen asks, what are the best case scenario comps for our young players this year? He does go on to give an example. For example, I'd be very happy if Dwayne Bacon developed into J.R. Smith or Monk morphed into a good Ben Gordon. So whether it's a player comp or whether you expect them to come out with a stat line, we're going to go through several players here. Let's start with Dwayne Bacon. Player comp or what you envision them doing, best case scenario for Bacon. What do you envision him this season?
Yeah, best case. I mean, I think Bacon can get to, you know, between 17 and 18 points a game. I think he can gobble up, you know, 5-ish rebounds, 6-ish rebounds. You know, if he can get to 2.5-3 assists, I think that's best case scenario for him. You know, he reminds me a little bit of a guy named TJ Warren, who's now with Indiana, had been in Phoenix for much of his career, who averaged about 18 points a game last year for the Suns. You know, Bacon's role is going to be substantially different next year. He's going to have a big role. He might start on this team, and he might see 30 minutes a game. So, you know, he's in the running to be most improved player, you know, on this roster with this opportunity he's about to get. And, you know, for a wing player at 6'7", 220 pounds, strong, pretty good athlete, proved that he can shoot the ball last year, you know, in a low sample size, shot about 44% from behind the arc. I mean, you know, this is a guy that can come in and immediately, I think, make a big difference for the Hornets and put the league on notice a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, the opportunity to play with the ball in his hands a whole lot more this season is going to be very obvious. I do think as a result, though, his efficiency will go down. His efficiency numbers last season were a little bit inflated, I think, because of the low sample size, but still promising nonetheless. I'm pretty bad at player comp, so I'm going to give one, but I'm not sure this is the best one. I'm not going to say like he produces like this guy, like in terms of his stat line, but I think his play style is very similar to that of kind of a less athletic Zach LaVine in terms of he gets to the rim a lot and he shoots from deep a lot and they kind of struggle in between. So I guess best case scenario is this watered down LaVine. I think he can get up to, like you said, like 15, 16 points per game. I don't know if I can go as far as saying 18. I know that he's going to get a lot of minutes. And something that we've mentioned before on previous podcasts, that something that he's got to improve on is to be a little bit more consistent on the defensive end. And I think he has the tools to be a consistent player on that end. But I think part of it, obviously, is the mental aspect. What are your thoughts on Bacon when it comes to his defense and his upside on that end?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was critical of his defense in Summer League when we did a pod, you know, about a month ago, kind of recapping Summer League. And, you know, he has the potential to be a good defender. We saw flashes towards the end of last season. He's got the body, the build, the athleticism to be, you know, not a wing stopper per se, but certainly an above average wing defender, and the Hornets are going to need that because they're really lacking, you know, in wing defense. So, you know, I won't say that I'm bullish on the prospects of him becoming even an average defender, but, you know, if he wants to reach his ceiling as a player in this league, you know, it can't only be we really need him to see an uptick offensively. We need him to play on both ends of the court. You know, he's young. This is the first time in his career he's really ever been asked to play serious minutes and get a full-time role. So you would think that this is a guy that we're going to see a lot of energy from early in the season, and he's going to leave it out there regularly. And here's the other thing for Bacon, too. You know, he has one of these young players, Monk, you know, Devontae Graham, Dwayne Bacon, Miles Bridges, one of them's going to have to step into a leadership role. And, you know, I think that Devontae is probably the most natural guy to do that, a little bit older, you know, has played a leadership role in the past at Kansas, you know, really being their quarterback. But I think Dwayne Bacon, if he realizes that he could be that guy, I think that opportunity is there for him too. So I'm curious to see if he can become a little bit of a vocal leader out there for this young team.
I would agree with you on Devontae Graham maybe being more naturally, you know, kind of a leader type, but Bacon's definitely going to see more minutes than him and have that opportunity to be on the court more often and to lead by example a little bit more. You did mention him being maybe like the most improved player this season on the Hornets roster. I tend to lean Miles Bridges, who we're going to talk about next. I think that Bacon, like I said, his efficiency is definitely going to go down next season, but Miles Bridges, I really don't have a good player comp for Bridges. I think he's definitely a unique player. But like Bacon, he's going to have that opportunity to play more often, play with the ball in his hands a whole lot more often. I do think for him to kind of reach his ceiling and the best case scenario for Bridges, he definitely needs to get better, a better handle, tighten that handle a little bit, better awareness on the defensive end. And I think, you know, in the best case scenario world for Bridges, I can see him shooting 36 or 37% from deep, and he's got to get better on those above the break threes because he does really well in the corners. But if Borrego wants him to play that four more often, I would assume that pick and pop game would be there more often at that four position. So he's got to get better at above the break threes. I think he can average close to 18 points per game and snag about 6 or 7 rebounds per game. Any, you know, player comps for Bridges or best case scenario for him?
I mean, I think those stats, you know, and you made a great point about him playing four and where the opportunity on the floor for him is going to be offensively. I think that's well said. Yeah, I mean, there's no question he's got to learn to tighten the dribble up a little bit. He's got to learn to become a little bit more of a creator, just a more high IQ player. I mean, you know, the one thing that really scares me about Miles is, you know, on top of that handle that he struggles with in traffic, certainly, you know, he's not the best decision maker. He shows flashes, but makes some pretty boneheaded decisions sometimes with the ball in his hands. So I where that turnover number could get to kind of scares me with how much of a role he's going to play this coming year. But yeah, I mean, I think you kind of hit it dead on. Comp wise, he's a tough one. He's a very unique player because of how much of a incredible athlete that he is, and he loves to play above the rim, but the problem is, can he get there without a wide open lane, right? Can he kind of weave his way there? So that's where he's got to grow. Harrison Barnes, you know, I've seen that comp. He's obviously a much more nuclear athlete than Barnes, but they kind of both have the same weaknesses, and they have a very similar body type. So I've liked that comp maybe more than others in the past with him. But he's really hard to compare to anybody, you know. So we'll see with Bridges. You know, we're not going to learn everything this year. But you know, in the next two and a half seasons, we're going to know if this is a guy who can actually play with the ball in his hands in an NBA offense, or if he's really just going to be a really good athlete that can grab and go and then shoot corner threes and beat a closeout, right? Like, so this is season one of what I would say probably two and a half that we'll kind of figure out what he is as a player. So you got to be excited about that a little bit at least.
Yeah, you're right in the sense that if he can only play off ball, that definitely limits his effectiveness as a player. We mentioned he's got to get better with that handle, and you know, if he's going to see more time on ball, he's got to be able to handle the ball and weave his way to traffic more consistently. Let's transition to Devontae Graham, player comp. I'm going to say Jameer, like a Jameer Nelson type. He's definitely got to improve shooting the ball from behind the arc, but he does like to shoot a ton from back there. He does run an offense like a veteran point guard. He's a low mistake player. He's not the best defensively, but he's definitely scrappy. He's undersized, but he makes up for it kind of in his scrappiness. But like I said, I think I can see him turning into a Jameer Nelson type. He likes to get others involved. He attempts a good bit of threes, but like Jameer Nelson, he kind of doesn't have the length or the height to get all the way to the hoop. And, you know, like Nelson, he's probably going to get overmatched on the defensive end. Graham, to me, is interesting because obviously we traded for Terry Rozier, and Graham is going to see significantly less minutes than Bridges and Bacon. So best case scenario for him is going to look very different than Bacon and Bridges just because he's not going to see a whole lot of minutes, but he's definitely got to get better shooting the ball. I think that's going to go a long ways in his development. I really don't have a stat line here for you, Spencer, but do you have any stat line for Devontae Graham or a player comp?
Yeah, I think it's habit at a player comp. I kind of like if everything breaks right, you know, I think they're similar size, they're similar athletes. You know, Raymond Felton got the ball at a high at some moments during his career. But certainly struggled, you know, when he first got to the NBA to score efficiently and shoot the ball from the outside. So, you know, and you know, Felton was also a high assist, low turnover player during his days too. There's another thing that they have in common, but you're absolutely right. Like Devontae has got to learn to shoot the ball at a higher clip. And I think he can get there. I really do, because he was never a really, really efficient shooter at Kansas, but he wasn't a bad one either. And, you know, I think that part of his game is going to come. And we've already seen that he has the ability to run an offense, which is a huge asset for any NBA team. I'm as excited, I think, about Graham this season as I am really just about any young player. I think he has the potential to become an NBA backup point guard that can stick for a long time. You know, obviously we need to see it because – you know, he's already 24 and a half years old, a little bit older, you know, from that perspective, even older than Dwayne Bacon, I believe. They're about the same age. But so, you know, it's a little bit make or break time for him. If he disappoints this year, that final year is not guaranteed. Now we start to scratch our heads. But like, I think he's a building block for the future. You know, never a guy who's going to be a starting point guard on a team, I don't think, but a guy would definitely be a piece of this house that Charlotte's trying to rebuild. So I am really intrigued with Devontae's development this season.
All right, last player I want to get to. I mean, I know there's other young players on this roster. Malik Monk, out of these four players, I feel like he's the most difficult to kind of project in terms of this best case scenario because he definitely has underwhelmed in his couple of seasons here in Charlotte. He's also a hard player, I feel like, to compare. I think he plays a lot like Nick Stauskas. But I think he can be better than Nick Stauskas. But I don't have too much hope for him because he really hasn't proven to me that he can be consistent on both ends of the court. He's clearly a more gifted passer than a player like Stauskas. He has better vision than him. But he has yet to reach the efficiency from deep that I would want out of him. I think best case scenario for Monk, I think what I would focus on is cutting down the turnovers, upping his efficiency from deep. His shot selection's got to improve, and he's got to have less boneheaded decisions on the defensive end as well. Spencer, do you have much hope for Malik Monk this season?
Not really. I mean, I think I've been on record enough saying that I don't believe in Malik Monk as an NBA player, really. And I would love to be proven wrong. I mean, I loved him coming out of Kentucky. I'll be the first to admit that. And I thought he really had the flash and the athleticism and just the ability to be a lights out shooter. And, you know, but he got to play in such a good Kentucky team and he got to play in transition a lot. And these are things that, you know, he hasn't been surrounded with on the next level. So, you know, for Monk, he's got to work on his body. There's some rumblings out there right now that he's put on some weight this summer, you know, by getting in the weight room and really taking that part of it serious. You know, but
we've heard that from like Frank Kaminsky, and we heard that from Hernan Gomez last season too. So it's nice that we hear that, but like that doesn't always translate.
Yeah, and you know, Hernan Gomez did come in incredible shape, but unfortunately, that doesn't make you a better athlete in his case. but yeah, Monk, like, you know, I just think him not showing up to summer league when I think that the team definitely wanted him to be there is a huge red flag. Like to me, that's a bad sign. That's a sign that there's a there's a break in communication somewhere between Malik Monk's quote unquote camp and the team. And that makes me really nervous. Aside from that, I don't really believe in him that much as a basketball player. But look, I think they're going to cut him loose this year. I think he's going to get a lot of minutes. I think he's going to get plenty of opportunity. He's going to play the ball in his hands. I think he could turn the ball over 5 times a game. Hell, I think the Hornets could lead the league in turnovers this year. I mean, they're void of really any good decision makers or a guy that's proven that in his career, you know, boiling all the way down to veteran Nick Batum. So we'll see. Like, I'm just at the point with Monk where it's like, I'm pretty much out, but hell, you could come out and shoot 42% from deep and all of a sudden that average 6.5 assists a game and just given a larger role on a young team with an offense that has very little identity, kind of find your niche. Like, this stuff happens, right? Like, it's not impossible. And maybe he was just so much in the shadow with this old group and didn't know where to fit in that it really affected his game. That's me being as optimistic as I'm going to be on the prospects of his season. But that's kind of the exciting part about this next year for the Hornets, right, Richie? Like, I think in the past, it's just been like, we're running it back with the same roster. Kind of know what to expect. No, if you think you have any clue how this season's going to go and who's going to step up and be, you know, the top three of scoring and rebounding and assist on this team, there's no way you actually believe that, right? Like, so that is exciting about this season, is we don't know who's going to step up. And, you know, why not Malik Monk? This is going to be a bad team. So this might be the opportunity he was waiting on.
He's definitely surrounded by lesser players, but I think that he's not going to have any excuse this season if he sees more minutes and more consistent minutes. If he does fail again, there's no one that we can look to besides him. And one player that he's going to have to surpass in terms of minutes, or at least trying to, you know, even it out, is Nick Batum. And that's where this next question comes from. It's definitely an interesting one. I didn't think about this until it was posed to us. This one is from Keith. He says, I don't know how to exactly phrase this, but Batum's contract, can it be an asset considering the 2021 free agent class? So, you know, I didn't understand this question at first, but when you look at the 2021 free agent class, it's stacked. You have, you know, Kawhi Leonard has a player option, Giannis, Bradley Beal, I think LeBron James, a lot of other players in this class that I'm sure a lot of teams are going to be vying for. So I guess what he is getting at is if a team can get off longer salary and acquire Nick Batum as an expiring that offseason, I guess it makes it more of an asset. And I think this does make some sense, the line of thinking that he has. I would not be opposed to it for Charlotte because I don't view Charlotte as this big free agency destination. So we're not going to be really competing for these types of players. I think it would depend on what players we would get back in this trade, but also I'm assuming we would also get some draft picks as well. So what's your thought on this question posed by Keith?
Yeah, it's a really good one. Thanks for that question, Keith. This is the right way to think about, you know, expiring contracts, especially ones with a large, you know, large number associated with them. I mean, it's really kind of the same thing in a much different, you know, we're talking about different free agent classes, obviously, but it's the same idea with Bismack Biyombo and his $17 million for this coming season and Marvin Williams, you know, with his $15 million. Like, those are two contracts that, let's say, if a team knew they were going to go after, you know, a Bradley Beal at the trade deadline or name your player, and they needed, and they're kind of void of a big contract they could send back to make the math work in the trade. Well, Marvin and especially Bismack at 17, those are pretty big numbers that can help. You know, it's trade fodder. I mean, you need that on your roster too. So, but the point you're making, Keith, about Nick Batum and his 27 and change million in 2021, it's the right one because, you know, if Charlotte could send that very big number out, take, you know, two or three longer contracts back from a team that is trying to carve out some space and get some assets in the meantime, I think that's a trade that they should probably go ahead and make. And, you know, we'll still be at that point when that trade would be made. We'll still be very much in rebuilding mode. You know, maybe right. We have a top three pick on our roster for next summer's draft or something, and things are looking a little brighter, but we won't be obviously far enough down the rebuild where we wouldn't be, or at least you would hope we wouldn't be willing not to take back some bad salary with a few more years to gain some assets. But look, like that is an internal business decision that Charlotte has to make, because they're still talking about wanting to build a team that can compete. That's really the conveyor belt quote you get from the GM or the owner when they actually do speak. Well, if you're trying to consistently build a team to compete, then that doesn't align with, hey, we're going to look at trades where we're taking on longer money to gain assets to actually help this rebuild. You know, that's a business, internal business decision. At some point, the Hornets got to make.
It's kind of weird to see the words Batum and asset in the same question here, but I've never thought of this. And, you know, the question that's been brought up in the line of thinking that you're talking about definitely makes a whole lot of sense. And to add to your point, or to kind of enhance your point, this team, the state of the team in a couple of years is not going to be so far down the road that we're going to want to use that cap space on these types of players like a Bradley Beal or whoever it may be. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, yeah, this might be something that they consider a couple of years down the line. Next question, at Fitch for Hornets. Thoughts on the invitation-only sit-down with past ticket holders and Mitch Kupchak? The ticket holders claim Monk has put on 20 pounds of muscle. I'm not sure how that's possible. And they will prioritize youth and development over veterans when it comes to minutes. And so the question kind of follows. So Batum and Bismack to the bench, Billy and Monk to get more PT. So where this comes from, I knew I saw this online somewhere. Finally figured out where I saw it. There's a guy on Twitter named Walter Burks. And he was a previous Charlotte Hornets ticket holder, Bobcats, I believe, as well. This season, he decided to let go of the season ticket holders. He's reconsidering after this sit-down, but he hasn't really committed back to that. He did say on Twitter, in response to a question on Twitter, they said the focus would be getting a competitive team, but they want to focus on building new players and giving young players the max time to play. Mitch said players are going to have to step up. And Mitch didn't know who that guy would be now that Kemba is gone. But yeah, the question is valid. I think that Borrego was brought in here for player development. That's always what we heard attached to his name. Now is going to be the opportunity with Kemba gone for all these young players to get a lot of playing time. I would think that, you know, Bismack and Marvin and Batum, some of these older players are going to see less time, but you really don't know. I think that this team definitely has to become a little bit watchable. So I don't know if they're going to like drastically decrease, but yeah, you're going to see more playing time out of Monk. You're going to see more playing time out of the young players. But there's definitely a business side to it in terms of putting a better product on the court. So that might require Marvin or Batum to play more minutes than they probably should, but you're still going to see plenty of minutes out of these young players.
Yeah, no question. And you know, I think it's a nice gesture that the team did this. I mean, a question I would ask is how many people were, you know, involved in this invitation only, quote unquote, you know, sit down. You know, because that would make a difference to me. And yeah, I mean, again, this is a nice gesture, but it would just be nice if there was like a press conference and you spoke to all your fans, you know, and not just the people that give you money every year. But this goes in line with the train of thought that this franchise has had for a while. So yeah, I really don't have much more to add than that. I mean, it's reactionary too, right? Like there's another parallel with the way this team has kind of done business. Everything's reactionary. They never seem to be out in front of anything. Yeah. So I don't really have much to add off of what you said there, Richie. I thought that was well said.
All right. Last question of the podcast. At Alex Golden NBA. You've been on a couple of his podcasts before, right?
I have. Yeah, he does a great job. Great job. Yeah. He's, if you're interested in the Indiana Pacers, go check out Alex Golden and Setting the Pace podcast. They do a great job.
I like the name. Should the Hornets consider trading Marvin Williams? If so, what would a realistic return be? I really, really like Marvin Williams, but should the Hornets consider trading him? I would say yes. It's so hard to gauge what a return would be for him. I'm assuming a team that would be trading for Marvin Williams would be a contender trying to make that last second push for the playoffs, or a playoff team that wants, you know, added veteran presence or an added 3-point shooter. I think he can provide that. It would be tough to see him go. Kali, I mean, would you think we could get a late first? I mean, considering this is probably a contender for Marvin, or do you think the second's the highest you can go with him?
Well, I think it depends. Like, I, you know, he's one of those guys. He's not only is he a player who can help a playoff team, but he's also an expiring contract. So,
yeah,
you know, kind of what we were just talking about with Batum and Biz is, okay, well, he's $15 million. He's coming off the books. What if a team, you know, gives us a guy who's on the books for a pretty decent number for an extra year? Well, then we should be able to get an asset with that. Like, that's the way yep. that the Hornets should be thinking. And I would be pretty surprised if Marvin Williams wasn't traded this upcoming season. But I would have also said the same thing 2 years ago with Kemba Walker. So so who knows? So, but yeah, I mean, he's a guy that the Hornets definitely should be trying to get on the right track to start the season. And then before, you know, months and months before the trade deadline, really have their ducks in a row and have all the feelers, you know, in on Marvin Williams, because they should be able to get something back for him.
And that's a good point. Like, if you're going to view this guy as not only an asset, but an expiring, maybe we can take back some salary while also acquiring maybe a late first for Marvin. But who knows how that's going to turn out. I never know with the trade assets and some of the returns for these players. Guys, thanks for tuning in. As always, we're happy to continue this conversation and everything we just discussed on this episode. Lastly, we'd also appreciate if you can take that 1 minute out of your day, if you haven't done so already, and give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. For Spencer, I am Richie. We'll see you guys next time. Go Hornets.